Okay, say, you're listening to the Twilight Groan.
Twilight Groan.
Submitted for your approval, there is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. There is also, it turns out, a 500th podcast about the Twilight Zone. Those episodes range in quality, as vast as space, and as entertaining as infinity. This one is the middle ground, between light and shadow, between science and superstition, between a podcast worth your time and a giant piece of crap. Join, if you will, Rish Outfield and his niece Cathexis as they travel into the Twilight Grove.
Hello again, monsters. This is Rish Outfield, and you are listening to the Twilight Groan. I am your host, and this is my niece.
Cathexis.
Cathexis. It's an interesting word. It's an actual word.
Yes.
But you won't go into any more detail.
I will not.
Every episode we talk about an episode of The Twilight Zone, Rod Serling's classic TV series, and today's show is from the first season, aired in March 1960, The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. And as always, we'll have Cathexis explain the story, and I'm going to go close the door because I closed it so we could record and somebody has opened it.
Yes. So this episode begins with your average 1950s, 1960s family on their wonderful, pristine street. Everything is clean and trimmed and nice, and everyone is outside together. The kids are buying ice cream. And our main character, Steve, right? He is out doing something, washing his car, I think, with one of his neighbors. And there's a loud rumble in the sky, and they all look up, and no one knows what it is, and they assume it's just a meteor. So they continue on with their day, doing everything normally. Not for long, but they continue like everything's fine, it was just a meteor, until they notice that all of their power has gone out. All of their electricity, their radios, their cars will not start, the lawnmowers, the everything that needs power to run is not working. The lights aren't on, nothing is working for them. So they decide, you know, we'll go into town, we'll check the next neighborhood, we'll go to the police station, is what one of the characters says. And someone suggested it was an electrical current or something, like it was explainable.
An electrical storm.
Oh, electrical storm. So they are just talking about doing that, you know, getting ready to go. And a young teenage-ish boy from the neighborhood comes and says, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't leave. They don't want you to leave. They won't let you leave. They don't want any of us to be able to leave. And he says that he has learned that from everything he has read about UFOs, I believe is what he said, aliens, things like that. They just kind of brush him off as being dramatic and ridiculous. And one of the other women says to the mother, you need to take him inside to lay down or something. And he's been watching too many movies or reading too many comic books. So they kind of just brush him off, but he won't stop. He just keeps going, and he's obviously very distressed and upset about it. So Steve, the main character, who is the alpha, like everyone is kind of, he's very tall, and he has a very loud, booming voice, so everyone just kind of is following his lead. So he stops for a minute and decides to listen to the kid. He just says, over and over, you know, they don't want you to leave, you can't leave. That's what happens in every one of the stories that I've read. And so it's kind of strange because at first they're just, one minute they're just thinking he's ridiculous, and then the next minute everyone just kind of gets really quiet and really, really paranoid, and it all kind of goes downhill very quickly. And so as they're standing there, you know, listening, trying to understand what is going on and listen to this kid who's being almost hysterical about this, one of the neighbor's cars, he's in his car, none of the cars will start. They ask him if his car's starting, he yells to them no, he gets out and the car starts. That's something that immediately as that car started, I was like, so that's what's happening. Okay. They immediately, like without skipping a beat, turn to him and just say, well, why is your car starting? Why is it? It just started all by itself. And he's very confused and scared and just, he just says, I don't know why this is happening. I didn't do it. I was out of the car. You saw me. And they all, except for Steve, get extremely paranoid and suspicious about him. And Charlie, a heavier set man in a Hawaiian shirt. Yes. One of the neighbors says something like, he's always been odd. His whole family is strange. And so they're just building on that. And then the car starts and stops like two more times or something like that. So it just amps up everyone's suspicions, I guess, and paranoia and just being frightened about what's going on. So they start to kind of turn on him and he runs to his house. And I guess someone brought up that they see him sometimes like walking and looking at the sky and just walking in the street at night late. And he says it's because he has insomnia, and he says that like 15 times probably, that he has insomnia, and no one listens whatsoever. So they're just on this rampage to crucify him, I guess. And he runs inside his house and or to his house, and everyone is standing in the street. And then Steve comes up to him and he's very defensive and paranoid. And shoot, what happened after that? So he's standing.
Well, then somebody says Steve's wife was talking that he's been doing something in his basement, working on some kind of radio.
Yeah, so they start talking about that, and Steve's wife is obviously looking horrified, but he isn't, like, trying to, he's not trying, he's not getting defensive about it, he's not acting like the other guy acted, he's just saying, you know, you're being ridiculous. And he actually says, because Charlie says, who have you been talking to, and who's talking to you? And Steve says, what does he say?
I've been talking to monsters.
Yes.
Monsters with green skin and two heads or something like that.
Yeah. And Steve's wife comes over and she says, it's just a ham radio. I bought him the book to build it. And they just will not listen to anything once they, or I guess, have made their minds up. So they are going after Steve. And man, why can't I remember what happened next?
Well, they hear something. They hear footsteps.
Oh, okay. So they hear footsteps, and so the camera pans to the end of the street, and you see like a shadow of someone, and you don't really know who it is. They're tall, and they look frightening, and it's dark. And I guess Steve had a shotgun, and they're all fighting over it, and Charlie grabs it, and just before Charlie fires the gun at him, you see a hammer, which earlier in the episode, there was a neighbor that went to, I guess, another neighborhood on the other side, I guess, or something like that. And he had a hammer in his overalls that they made a point to zoom in on. And so right before he gets shot, you're like, oh, that's the neighbor. So he obviously dies. Charlie is just trying to rationalize why he did that, and everyone starts turning on him then.
Charlie's lights go on.
Yeah, the lights go on in his house, and then everyone just, the same lady that said the exact same thing about the car, well, why is your car turning on, says, well, why are your house lights on? And she's like the instigator, just hysterical, loud, making everyone that much more paranoid. And so they start looking at him and yelling at him and confronting him, and he's freaking out and backing up and running to his house. And they start throwing rocks, like big rocks, at him, and I guess one hits him in the head. And his wife comes and runs over to him, and he says, it's not me, but I know who it is. They say, who? And he says, it's the kid. And the kid's mom freaks out, and he's all confused, and everyone's confused. And then within a split second, everyone's convinced, like, oh yes, it is him. He knew. He said this was going to happen. He said he read the stories. He said we shouldn't go. So they start chasing the kid and his mom, and just down the road, this big mob of people. And suddenly it turns into, like, people have ladders that they are carrying and, like, bats and whatever they can grab, just going insane. And Steve is still trying to... This entire time he's been saying, you know, you're being ridiculous. You have to all calm down. This is... You're not being rational. And so... Man, why am I forgetting so much?
Okay, so the camera pulls back and we see like an aerial view of the neighborhood.
Okay, that's when it's... Okay,
and so, all the houses' lights are turning on and off here and there. And they're like, oh, their lights. It's them.
Yeah, and then they just... Everyone starts going into hysterics. The lights are flashing on and off. You can hear a woman screaming like, no, stop. Because the lights are flashing so much. And then the camera pans out into... You can see, I guess, the city, but... You can see it's like ants running all over with whatever they can grab, and it's the people going crazy, and there's a UFO on the hill, and they can see there's these two men. They don't look like aliens. They just look like men. They're wearing like shiny outfits, and they say something just along the lines of like, you take away their electricity and their ways to communicate outside, and this is what happens every time. You just sit back and watch it happen. And then one of them says to the other, just one after another. And then they keep repeating it and repeating it and repeating it, and as they're walking up into the spaceship, right?
Well, he says something along the lines of every town has a Maple Street.
Yes, yes.
And so you just sit back and watch this happen one after another.
One after another,
one
yeah.
One after another.
Yep. And then it shows the spaceship in space beautifully. Yeah. I hope that wasn't too horrible of an experience.
So this is the first episode that you have chosen to watch. Was there a reason you chose this one?
I didn't realize it before, but while we were watching, I've seen this one before.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know why I didn't remember, but the title, for some reason, was just rang something in my head where I was like, that's... interesting to me, and I don't know why, so that's why. I have seen it before. I didn't remember it very well until I saw the main actor. So, yeah.
Yeah, Claude Akins played the main actor, and you recognized him immediately. He has one of those faces, but I don't know what I know him from.
No, there's nothing. He was in one of the Planet of the Apes, though. Battle for the Planet of the Apes. He played General Aldo? Aldo?
I don't know. Was he a gorilla?
I do not know. But yeah, I didn't know him.
He had one of those faces of like a small town sheriff.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
A western or in a cop show, a bartender kind of thing. Does he show up in a later Twilight Zone? Is he the bartender in Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up?
Let me check. It says he had his own series about he was a sheriff.
Okay.
Something Sheriff Lobo?
Oh, he was Sheriff Lobo. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a 60s series before my time.
The only one that I see that he was in is this one that we watched.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know why. And his voice was very, I guess, easy to spot. It's a very, very deep voice. And I thought he was really good in this. Like, he was very...
Well, he was the least hysterical.
Yeah.
And the least overacty. But he was the voice of reason, and so, you know, of course, he plays the role like a regular person.
Yeah.
Whereas I felt like some of these other performances, and maybe this is just really hard dialogue to pull off, but like the very first line that Steve's wife gives, they said, oh, a meteor just passed overhead. And she said, too close for my money. And then she went back in the house. And
much too close.
Much is how it was. But it was. I'm sure it's hard to make this fast a descent into madness seem realistic. And I think Serling was going for that these are just regular people. They're not, you know, lunatics or anything like that. They are like you and me, but they have within them the paranoia and prejudice to turn on each other. And this is... Of the episodes that we've watched, this is the most overtly political episode. Okay, so obviously the 1950s was a time of great paranoia and fear. The Russians had launched Sputnik, and They were our adversaries in the Cold War. And a lot of Americans were paranoid about spies. They were paranoid about them having satellites flying overhead where they could watch us, where they could report to us. People started seeing communists everywhere. There was the great McCarthy Red Scare, as they call it, where I know so-and-so is secretly a communist, and there, you know, there are spies among us, and Joe McCarthy and Richard Nixon are putting people on the stand and saying, are you now or have you ever been a communist? And you need to name names and tell us who you've been meeting with and who else among us is a communist. And those that wouldn't name names, they would be blacklisted. You know, they couldn't get work in Hollywood. They couldn't get work in high-profile jobs because they could be spies, because they could be secretly working for the enemy. And all of that happened in a really short period of time, where there was this sense of paranoia and you don't really know who your neighbors are, and people could be convicted in the court of public opinion based on who their friends were or a meeting that they went to when they were 20 years old or something that they said that was later taken out of context. And so I feel like that is what this episode is about. But you can interpret it in any number of ways. And here we are in 2020, and a lot of it feels relevant in that something that you said 20 years ago can come back. Yeah. You're friends with somebody. You are accused of something, but you're not arrested. You're not prosecuted for it, but everybody still judges you for things, you know, guilty before being proven innocent. Anyway, so the monologue that Serling has at the end is interesting because he says, for the record, prejudices can kill, and suspicion can destroy, and a thoughtless, frightened search for a scapegoat has a fallout all of its own for the children and the children yet unborn. And the pity of it is that these things cannot be confined to the Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm. I liked that.
You know, we have never had something quite like the Red Scare since, but we've had our own bouts with paranoia, and after September 11th, there was this sense of xenophobia and this sense of they are walking among us. And who is not like us? Who doesn't believe what we believe? Who is secretly one of them? And that, much like this episode, happened all at once. You know, you couldn't believe how fast that escalated. You know, so-and-so doesn't support our country. So-and-so is on the side of the terrorists. So-and-so said this in an interview. And there was the revival series in the early 2000s that remade this episode. I believe they renamed it The Monsters Are on Maple Street.
Oh.
But in that episode, they're not monsters. They're terrorists. And they spell out exactly what the subtext is. Somebody's sabotaging. Somebody's doing something on this neighborhood. Who is not like us?
Yeah.
Who has been talking to other people? Who doesn't look like us? Who doesn't? And that episode, well, along with every other episode, except for the first one in the 21st century Twilight Zone revival, absolutely sucked. And the reason was because it was on the nose. It was saying terrorist instead of saying monsters.
Yeah.
Whereas in this episode, okay, yeah, it's Martians that they're all afraid of or whatever. But is it? You know, I'm not old enough to remember what it was like to see a satellite go overhead that belonged to the Russians or how terrifying that might have been for Americans. But I am old enough to remember so-and-so. He, you know, his family is from Pakistan.
Okay.
You know, so-and-so, he's not a Christian.
He's not a Christian.
I think he might be a Muslim. I don't know. But you better not play with his kids. And you know, there are people that will take advantage of that, and they will fan the fire of prejudice and get people all riled up about it. You know, there were people that spoke up during that period after 9/11 that were just like, hey, there are good people on every side, and there, you know, you can't indiscriminately say people that don't support the war on terror or the war in Iraq or in Afghanistan or whatever, that doesn't mean that they are pro-terrorist or whatever. And George W. Bush famously responded with, in this war on terror, you are either with us or you're against us. There's no third choice. And then, of course, here we are in 2020. Truly, you see it, a parallel to this.
Yeah.
And there are people that take advantage of that and just love to say, you're different from this person. Ignore all the things that are similar. Focus on the differences.
Yeah, exactly.
They are not like us. The things that are important to us are not important to them. Anyway, I didn't even ask you if you liked this episode. I feel like this one is a little bit easier to see the flaws in than all the other episodes that we've watched.
I think this is probably my favorite one.
Oh, okay. You like it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was very, very well done.
One of the things that I've always wondered is, you know, how did audiences in 1959, 1960 respond to these things? For the most part, it's hard to know unless you want to read the reviews that came out around then. And this was one of the episodes where people asked Serling, okay, this isn't really about monsters, is it? Because Serling was well known for his outspokenly liberal political views.
Really?
And he had a lot of issues with the politicians at the time, and especially for the witch hunts and all that stuff. And he had made a lot of enemies in his life. And there were people that was like, this episode was definitely political. You almost come out and say it there at the end. And he said, but you can choose to interpret it. They're Martians.
Yeah.
These are Martians that they're all freaked out about. And the Martians are pulling the strings and watching us destroy one another. And I like that. That's how analogies work, where you say it's about something, but it's secretly about something else.
Yeah.
And makes it palatable for the people that don't want to hear
about
the other thing. And that was the difference between them saying, these are terrorists. Terrorists are here in your neighborhood. Look, it's Jim. He's a terrorist. Versus, it's the boy. The boy is one of the Martians.
Yeah.
You kind of have a step removed that makes it all right. I don't know if that makes sense. But this has always been considered one of the classic episodes of The Twilight Zone, but it's very of its time.
Yeah.
And yeah, some of those performances are just awful. And the guy that they immediately say is one of them because his car starts.
Oh my gosh.
His delivery is so stilted and awkward that I almost wonder, did they tell him to do that? In the same way as the clerk in the last episode seems almost robotic and weird in the way that she's delivering her dialogue. He says, you know what I'm guilty of? Insomnia. That's what I'm guilty of. You know, and I come out early in the morning or late at night and I walk around the neighborhood and I watch the stars. I look up at the sky. That's what, and I don't.
Very forced, yes.
It's just was weird, and maybe in the script it says, you know, all of this is delivered in a very suspicious way.
That was fair.
His interpretation. Yeah. I don't know. But the punchline of the episode is that none of these guys are Martians.
Yeah.
That the Martians have put this chain of events in order to see us turn on each other and to have us destroy each other. And somebody at the very end of the episode grabs a pistol, and we don't know who it is, but they shoot multiple times. So the interpretation is that they are killing one another. Yeah, there was somebody with a ladder, which is weird. But if you had seen him like actually strike somebody with that ladder, it wouldn't be weird anymore. No. You'd be like, oh my gosh, did you see that?
He was just running.
And the part where they pick up rocks from like somebody's planter.
Yeah, why?
And they're breaking windows and they hit Charlie in the head with one. I thought that was really well done in the mob mentality way of
people. It's just so strange that would be your first instinct, is to throw these rocks at someone who isn't even inside their house yet. Like they were, I guess they were aiming at him? I don't know.
I don't know. I knew everybody has their equivalent. When I first moved to LA, the Lakers went to the championship. And the word on the street was, if the Lakers lose tonight, we're going to riot.
Oh.
But if the Lakers win tonight, we're going to riot.
Oh.
And so my friend Eric and I, we got in his car just as the Laker game was ending. And we drove to downtown, the neighborhood, you know, where the businesses were, to see what would happen. And sure enough, there was a riot. And there were tons of people running out into the streets. So the parade or riot or demonstration, whatever, the celebration was already in progress. And Eric and I, we just stayed in his car because all traffic had come to a halt anyway. And there were people and they were marching down the street. There was like breaking things, you know, tipping over garbage cans and stuff. The only thing that happened with us was they shook our car and, you know, shouted. But it, like I said, it was celebratory. It was celebration time. Come on. Basically is what it was. And, you know, it wasn't that they were angry. It was very, very interesting. And now, as an older dude, I think, that was dumb. Why did you do that? Oh, in fact, when we came back to Eric's apartment, his landlady was disgusted. She was like, you guys went right in there when you knew there was a riot going on? Yeah, she thought we were dumb kids. And I guess we were, but it was something that we had never experienced or we had wanted to experience. And the point, I guess, I was trying to make is this was people who wanted to let off some steam. They were going to riot no matter what. And maybe it was something to do, but, you know, there's always that, the potential for that sort of thing with people. Yeah, I've completely lost track of the point I was trying to make. Sorry. I'm not sure how far back we need to go, so let me say. But, you know, now it's kind of easy to see parallels with somebody tweeted something in 2011, and yeah, that tweet comes back and it says, hey, this guy should lose his job, mm-hmm, because he made a joke, but I'll bet it's not really a joke. Or, but you can't joke about these things now. Yeah. Or if enough people make enough of a stink, Disney has to fire him.
Yeah, that's happened. You know what happened. I
mean? Their show will get taken off the air, that kind of stuff.
Canceled culture. Yes, that happens constantly.
And see, I that's new to me. I just, this year, just like
Extra.
I learned canceled culture. So what does that mean exactly?
It's kind of like, I wonder if I can come up with an example.
This person doesn't exist to me anymore.
Canceled culture at this point means I want to get you fired. I want to get you, if it's something bad enough, I want to get you into like court, prison, jail, whatever is possible. I want to get whatever news media coverage I can that's bad on you. It's basically just swarming a person and ruining their lives. That's it. That's really what it is. Whether it's like, what's his name? He was in American Beauty.
Kevin Spacey.
Whether it's like Kevin Spacey, where, you know, that's a big deal, what he was accused of doing, or whether it's like Kylie Jenner wearing cornrows. It's just like hatred. Just like, there's no forgiveness anymore whatsoever. It's like, you did this, you should have known it was wrong, and yeah, that's it, you're done.
Okay, so I mean, I think you can read into it in 2020.
Yeah.
That this episode is relevant, despite maybe the overacting of a couple of the the characters. But I think that that's the difference between the monsters are due on Maple Street, the aliens, and there are terrorists
among us. That's a big difference.
If you say they're monsters, you in your mind can say, well, this is really about racism.
Yeah.
This is really about anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
This is really about homophobia.
Mm-hmm.
This is really about the war on Christmas. You know, et cetera. Whatever you can see in your mind, you can connect the dots and say, this speaks to me because of. But when you say it's terrorists, then there's not really any wiggle room. You can say that's terrorists. Okay. And I think that that was the problem with that episode. I'm not going to suggest that we sit down and watch that episode, unless you really, really wanted to, and it was an easy thing that we could do. But I don't know how many of these we'll be able to do. I want to focus on the good episodes. I don't.
Yeah.
If there is an episode that everybody agrees is the worst episode of The Twilight Zone, I don't want to sit down and waste our few slots doing it. If we've been doing this for a year and we've already got 50 episodes done or whatever, then I'd be like, okay, hey, let's watch. Oh, you know what episode I remember absolutely sucking? You know, that kind of thing. But why did you say that you think this is your favorite of the ones that we'd watched?
I don't know. It just felt, I guess it felt more personal, almost. Like, it was, from the beginning, I knew that there was going to be some sort of, like, sheep mentality in blaming each other, you know? Like, one person says it's this guy, so that's it, you know? because his car turned on, he's the bad guy. So I don't know. It just was not predictable, but I don't know. I guess I was just able to tell from the very beginning that that was.
Another thing that I don't know if got cut out or we got was that Serling was a very, very outspokenly political guy.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of problems with the government and with a certain mindset of certain people and probably the higher ups at the network, you know, yeah. the sponsors. Like I said, in the very first episode, he would always have criticism of, oh, you know, this might offend somebody in yeah. Ohio, or the sponsors saying, well, we can't have the car stall and have it be one of our cars, because people will think we're saying that our cars might stall. And he's like, the car has to break down. It has to break down the script to work. And they're like, okay, what if they're in a taxi then? But he had promised CBS before they made this show that it would not be political, that the episodes would be accessible to everybody, whether they were rich or poor urban or
technically
rural.
He did that.
And this is one of the more overtly political episodes.
Yeah.
But still, it is Martians. Not Martians. Did they ever say Martians? I'm sorry.
They just say UFO, aliens. It's the same, you know, I don't know.
Martian is just not a word that we use anymore.
Yeah.
But they did back then.
But
he was interviewed when this episode came out. And they said, well, come on, clearly this is your politics coming in again. And he said, well, yeah, I mean, I am always going to figure into every script that I write. But if you like, you can interpret it in whatever way you want. Or you can, we show there are aliens at the end that are masterminding the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I wonder if the story would feel any different if one of the people in the neighborhood had been revealed to be an alien.
Yeah.
Because it would have changed a lot. The point of the episode, I think, and of course it's just my opinion, but I think it's that none of them were. They were all just people, and yet they killed each other. They turned on each other because that's something sour inside of all of us. That's something rotten in humanity. We always want to look and say us versus them.
Yeah.
How are those people different than us?
I think that's really
how true. Are those people not really people? So it's okay that I hate them.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's ever going to go away. One day, maybe you're in your grandkids' days, hopefully racism will be a smaller thing. More racists will have died out and more tolerance will exist and all that. But we're always going to look and see that person's different from me because of this. Even if you have to make up something.
Mm-hmm.
It's just inherent in human nature. And I think 500 years from now, those people will be able to watch this episode from ancient television and say, you know, that kind of reminds me of something that goes on in our world. I think so. I hope that I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe 500 years from now, there won't be any people to watch it. So
that's fair.
Anyway, that's the power of a show like this that's all these years old, and yet I think it still speaks to our nature. There's always a guy, a fat guy with a loud Hawaiian shirt.
Pointing the finger.
And sometimes I'm that fat guy, I guess. That's the truly scary thing about that episode is sometimes that fat guy is me.
Or sometimes that fat guy is all of us.
Oh my goodness. We are a little fatter than we need to be. Okay, well, hey, thank you again for hanging out with me and watching this episode of The Twilight Zone. Feel free, listeners, if there are episodes that you would like us to watch, make suggestions. What episode is your favorite, or what episode do you think it would be interesting to hear us talk about? What do you know Claude Akins from? Why was Jack Weston, who played Charlie, paid more than all of the rest of the actors?
Yes. Significantly paid more than everyone else.
Isn't that weird? I think it's my pick for next week's episode, next time's episode. I can't say weeks because it's a bad habit to get into and it's hard to put these out once a week.
Yeah.
but I've chosen, or maybe you chose it for me, Perchance to Dream.
Okay.
Which is another first season episode of The Twilight Zone, and the one that personally scared me the most as a little boy. So hopefully you will join us then. I have been Rish Outfield.
And I have been Cathexis.
And don't be an oddball. His whole family is oddballs, just like you.
Up next on The Twilight Grown, we will be discussing Perchance to Dream. So you will come to know The Twilight Grown. The Twilight Grown is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. That means you're free to share the file, to download it, to save it, to listen to it, to delete it and forget about it, but you cannot take credit for it, change the file, or try to sell it. That's fair, isn't it? In any zone.
So none of the electricity or anything is like that is working.
We're recording, kiddo.
Kazem, you have to be quiet.
Go play downstairs, please.
Look, I'll give it to Remy. Oh, okay.
Political episode. You know, where is that coming from? Did the door open again? Is the door closed?
Cows.
Did you
say
cows?
Me.
Well, moo. I don't know. I guess...
Creature of night.
Help me!
No. Are you saying help me or owie?
Burp.
Dookie, what?
I think he said excuse me.
Oh.
One ball. Which color do you want?
Yeah.
Oh, get a pink one.
You could sleep with three balls and that's it.
Case, are you sure you want to sleep with three balls? It's hard enough to sleep with two.
I was gonna say three bald wonder.